Okay, am I there? There I am. Okay. Over the last couple of weeks, as we've been continuing through Genesis and specifically focusing on Abraham, I've had a couple of you talk to me about how you're finding it helpful, because the reality is when we look at Abraham, we see not only that Abraham is lifted up as an example of faith and trusting God, but when you actually read his story, you see he's a very real example, someone who struggled. Someone who, this idea, even though he's lauded throughout the scriptures as being someone that's an example of faith, you see his struggle of faith as well. There's a lot of things on Facebook that I see that I don't appreciate, but I saw an image, and I won't put it up yet, but, you know, we often hear the phrase when it talks about trusting God with our future. We'll sometimes hear, and I know it's a country song as well, "Jesus, take the wheel." I found this humorous. I think if you can put this up, the "not that wheel, Jesus," the steering wheel. I think we've all experienced that, to where we're in this struggle trying to release control. Control is the key word when it comes to trusting God to take the wheel. Is, are you willing to let go? I find it interesting that from everything I have read, they have the technology that we could all pretty quickly transition to driverless cars. But the biggest thing that is keeping that from happening is none of us want to give up that type of control. We don't want to give it up to Jesus. We don't want to give it up to Google either, so, or whoever it is coming up with that. But, you know, the idea of trusting God and faith, I think that phrase of "Jesus, take the wheel," and this image is, while it's humorous, we've had those moments where we feel like the wheels are falling off. We don't understand what's going on, and it gets even harder to trust God. Much like Abraham, at an old age, being promised such a bold promise that God was going to give him children, and then time goes by, and that promise isn't fulfilled, and yet he's still expected to trust and still expected to believe. We're going to be looking today, continuing and looking at Abraham and this struggle of faith at Genesis 16. And when we look at this today, we're really looking at the idea of when we come to this place of trusting God, are we trusting God's plans, or are we trying to help God out and figure out our own plans? I'm really guilty of that. And I've shared that my life verse, Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, the "trust the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths." I say that as my life verse, not because I've mastered it, but typically when I have that, I feel like I just lost a wheel in my car moment, and that experience, like things are falling apart, it's forced me to come back to that place of saying, are you really trusting God in this moment? And because sometimes for me, it's even a greater struggle, because one of my gifts is to be able to analyze things and think things through, and I'm a planner. And so it's very easy sometimes for me to try to get ahead of God and try to analyze things and figure things out and give God a hand, when all he wants us to do is to trust him. And so we're going to look at Abraham and Sarah. Sarah is really a central character in this account as well. But we're going to, and again, as I've mentioned, their names eventually change from Abraham to Sarah, or Abraham to Abraham, Sarai to Sarah in the next chapter. But for when I refer to them, other than when I'm reading the text, if I reference them, I'm most likely just going to say Abraham and Sarah, just for to avoid that confusion. So if you, either name's the same person, Abraham, Abraham, Sarai, Sarah. But let's go ahead and read through Genesis 16. We're going to read verses 1 through 6 and really start looking and unpacking how Abraham and Sarah are still struggling with how is God going to fulfill this promise to them of a child. Verse 1 says, "Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. She had a female Egyptian servant whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said to Abram, 'Behold, now the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go into my servant. It may be that I shall obtain children by her.'" Now, there's a lot of cultural things going on here. This is not, most likely, I'd say none of you know anyone who's experienced this dynamic in their family. This was not an uncommon practice in a household. Not only we see, there's this picture that Abraham eventually has more than one wife, and we see that there are accounts of that throughout the Old Testament. And yet, consistently in those situations, you see that it creates a lot of stress and heartache, and it's not something that's encouraged. But what you see going on here specifically is Sarah is using a practice that would have been common in that day to say, well, I can't give you a child. So Hagar, her house servant, would have been of age to be able to bear a child. So Sarah is presenting her as a viable surrogate mother. And so that God would provide the promise, not directly through Sarah, but through Hagar. What we see in this account is, one, we understand, if we understand the culture, that was not an uncommon or an unaccepted practice. And what we see is Abraham and Sarah's mistake is not necessarily in the cultural practice, it's in that they're not trusting God. And so let's just keep going on that. But I don't want to get into that a lot, but I think it's when you see something that's very culturally different, I think it's good to pause and think about how the culture then is different than the culture is now. But in summary, it's Sarah trying to use something that would have been common in that day to try to help God out to fulfill the promise and providing the promised child. So verse 2 again says, "And Sarah said to Abraham, 'Behold, now the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go into my servant. It may be that I shall obtain children by her.' And Abram listened to the voice of Sarai. And so after Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, the Egyptian, her servant, and gave her to Abram for her husband as a wife. And when he went into Hagar, and she conceived, and when she saw that she had conceived, she looked with contempt, or it's disdain, on her mistress. And Sarai said to Abram, 'May the wrong done to me be on you. I gave my servant to your embrace, and when she saw that she had conceived, she looked on me with contempt. May the Lord judge between you and me.' But Abram said to Sarai, 'Behold, your servant is in your power. Do to her as you please.' Then Sarai dealt harshly with her, and she fled from her." You know, one of the things that when I was reading this earlier this week, it not only reminded me, and we see the struggle that Abraham and Sarah have with faith, but you also see their flaws. Sarah comes up with a plan, which is a picture of her struggling with embracing God's plan and promise and trying to come up with her own way of fulfilling this promise. But you also see Sarah is causing a lot of stress for Abraham as well, in that he agrees to the plan. And there's actually a lot of parallels with this in Genesis 3 with Adam and Eve. Adam listening to the voice of Eve is giving us a picture, a very similar language here, is that instead of obeying God's voice and trusting his promise, he literally obeys the voice of Sarah in this moment. And so Abraham is just as guilty of not trusting God in this moment, instead trusting this plan that Sarah has conceived. And it's you have this experience, so okay, now Hagar, the servant girl, she conceives, knows she's pregnant, and as everyone starts to know she's pregnant, she starts looking down on Sarah. And there's this look of disdain and this contentment. And so Sarah is frustrated and she's angry that her servant is pregnant in the way that she's acting about this. And so you see some things going on between Sarah and Hagar, this in a sense of rivalry and competitiveness. And yet she goes to Abraham and says, "Look, my servant who I gave to you is now pregnant," and she's looking at me with contempt and basically says, "What are you going to do about this?" And Abraham basically concedes and says, "Look, it's your servant. Do she's under your power. Do what you want." I'll tell you, if I was looking at this situation and just judging the character of those involved, you don't see a lot of compassion from Abraham or Sarah in this story. And obviously, Hagar's at fault too in the contentment that she's having towards her master, and yet what we see unfolding here is Sarah and Abraham come up with this plan, and it doesn't work out exactly the way they thought it would. And it starts turning things into a real mess. And that's where I want to pause for a second before we keep reading and just think about the times in our own life as we look at this story of how our plan is not always the same as God's plan. And when we think about this account, I want you to think about Abraham and Sarah, but I also want you to think about your own life and the times where you've maybe been guilty of the same thing. And because when we look at this story, God had a plan. And we go into the next chapter, we see that plan fulfilled. God is going to give a child to Abraham and Sarah, and specifically through Sarah. God has a very specific plan. But then we have the picture of Sarah's plan that Abraham endorses and embraces. And so you have this picture, of clear picture between what Sarah and Abraham try to do to try to help God out. And he doesn't need, anytime we try to help God out, that's a red flag, or at least a yellow flag. We need to trust God's plan. But we see a clear difference between what God's plan was. And when we think of the previous chapters and the chapters to come, God had a specific plan. Abraham and Sarah were, instead of trusting God's plan, were trying to come up with their own plan. And when we unpack that, we realize that, you know, sometimes the reason we struggle with trusting the plan, God's plan, is that we have trouble trusting God's character. We have trouble trusting God's character and his promises. And think, look at the verse describing Sarah. She says, in those first few verses, she says, Sarah believed that God was preventing her from being pregnant. There's a bit of an indictment in that. Now, Sarah would have been aware of the promise. And instead of trusting the promise that had been given to Abraham, she's, and again, can we blame her? She's well past childbearing years. And it's been long since that God has given this promise. So to be fair, I think if we were in her shoes, we can understand the struggle. And yet, in this moment, we see that she really is indicting God and his character in this moment. It says, because the promise is out there. Abraham and Sarah have been given the promise of a child and a great nation that would come from that child. But instead, Sarah believes that God has closed her womb and has prevented her from being pregnant. You know, I think we can do the same thing. If we have a skewed view of God's character and his intentions towards us, it will affect our level and our ability to be able to trust him. I often talk to people that almost have this idea of God that he's up there just waiting for us to mess up, that he's going to whack us and somehow cause us to trip up. We do well enough on that or on our own. God's not going to try to cause us to trip up. And yet, if we have a view of God, and this is where we need to look at our own life, if you're struggling with trusting God and his promises and trusting that he's with you and that he's going to care for you even during difficult circumstances, we have to pause and ask ourselves, what do we really believe about God? Do we believe in his holiness and his love and his mercy? Do we believe that his intentions towards us are good? Sarah was struggling in this. And so she's not only not trusting God's character, she's not trusting the promise. The promise is there. The promise is out there. And in all these chapters that we've been working through are reminding us of the promise way back in Genesis 12 that was reaffirmed in Genesis 15 and is going to be reaffirmed again in the next chapter, that God is going to give a child to Abraham and Sarah. And that through that child would come a great nation and all of the nations would be blessed. I think Sarah and Abraham fall into that trap that I describe, that Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 reminds me of constantly in my own life, of the times where instead of trusting the Lord with all of my heart, I begin to lean on my own understanding. And in leaning on my own understanding, I try to fix things. I try to figure things out. And again, if God has given you a gift to be able to plan and organize and do those things, the issue is not using those gifts, but when you get ahead of God and are no longer trusting his plan, but you're trying to figure it out yourself, we've got things backwards. And so if you're here today and you're struggling with trusting God's plan and instead are trying to pursue your own plans, I want to ask you, are you trusting God's character? Do you trust his intentions towards you are good? And are you trusting his promises? Often, though, and I think this really pops out of this story very clearly, for Abraham and Sarah because of their age and because of the time that has passed. Part of the struggle with trusting God's plan instead of in pursuing our own plan comes to just the waiting for God. I mean, how many of you have discovered that God's timing is not our timing? The many times I can think of that in my life that I've been reminded of that God's timing is not the same as my timing. That's the one that I have to put on my list of I'm a slow learner. I have to be constantly reminded of that truth. I've heard many of you quote the phrase that God is never late. He's seldom early, but he's always what? Yeah, he's always right on time. Our understanding of time versus God's understanding of time and his fulfilling his promises in our life are two different things. And especially when we're going through difficult times, when we're going through dark valleys, it can be really difficult to say, God, even in the midst of this mess, in the midst of the pain, I'm going to trust you. God calls us to trust him. You know, we've been in our family, been reminded of this in the last week or two. Some of you know Bryce has made this college decision. But the reality is, before he chose Duquesne, he had decided to go to Robert Morris because the cost was just not, it was prohibitive. It was just, couldn't be justified. The day that I was planning to pay the deposit at Robert Morris, Bryce was offered an additional scholarship at Duquesne that not only makes it possible, but makes it significantly cheaper than Robert Morris now. I mean, and I remember just as I read the email from the school in tears, because I know my son, and I knew that's where his heart was. All I could think of was, okay, God, this was not my timing. Would have much rather this news come yesterday or a little earlier. But I think Bryce probably agree with that. But it just made, we've had those examples over the last year of just God taking care of us, God caring for specific things. And I have to give God praise for the way he's provided for Bryce for the coming year. But again, it was not my timing. What that illustrates, though, is how much more did that email mean? In that moment, as I'm thinking myself, in the next couple hours, I'm going to get on, I'm going to make this payment to secure his spot at a different school. It just heightened the fact of God. I don't know. It's like God likes suspense, but for us, it was definitely one of those moments. And it just reminds me, I can go back and you have stories you can share as well of illustrations in your life that God didn't show up and that God didn't answer the prayer in your own timing. But in his timing, he did. When we think of this account, too, though, I think it's important that we realize there are consequences for our plans. When we deviate from God's plan and we pursue our plan, most of the time it creates a real mess. Now, think about it. If we stop the story today at verse 6, Hagar has lost her home. She's heading back to Egypt. And a time and a day that for her to be a young pregnant woman, not knowing if she's going to be able to return to her birth family or not. Imagine the anxiety she's having, but she's now gone. She's out on her own with a child on the way. Sarah has lost her servant. Abraham's lost a wife and a child. I mean, you think about what Abraham and Sarah were trying to do and helping God out and providing the promised child. It didn't turn out that way. If we stop at verse 6, Hagar is gone, which means the child's gone. Abraham and Sarah are still without a promised child. Their plan didn't work, and all it did was create a mess. You know, as I think about that, I think it's important that we understand that we need to be sure that we don't equate, because as we talk about our plan, God's plan, the struggle often is that sometimes the line between what is our plan and God's plan is blurry. And I've also seen sometimes people, their plan, they try to push it to become God's plan. Because it's what they want. I know some people that I look at the patterns in their life and I realize after story of account of them trying to pursue what God wanted in their life, I remember thinking back and saying, you know, this person, it seems like their plan always ends up being God's plan in their mind. And again, it's discerning God's will for our lives is a challenge, and it's a struggle we all have to push through. But I've seen in some people's lives where what they want is so clear, what they want, that they're willing to, in a sense, look for God's endorsement of their plan to be God's plan. And what happens, and I've seen this again and again in people's lives, when we try to put God's endorsement on our plan and that plan then turns into a mess, who do we blame? God. I've seen it again and again. People that will, instead of trusting God's plan, they had a clear in their mind, this is what they want, and so they have worked it out that they believe that's what God is calling them to do, and everyone around them, and see, that's why we have to seek godly counsel when we're making big decisions. We need people that we know are walking with God and trust God to be able to speak into our lives, because we need help and discernment in knowing God's will. But we have to be really careful that sometimes we've taken something, it wasn't ever God's plan, it was our plan, and we just asked for God's endorsement, and the mess that it created is not God's mess, it's our mess. And that's what we see at the end of verse 6. Sarah and Abraham have created a mess that's not only impacted their lives, it's impacted their whole household. And Hagar, again, she's if you have any compassion for anyone in this story, it should be for Hagar, who's really caught. I mean, yes, she shouldn't be looking at Sarah with contempt, but I mean, that again, I don't understand the female dynamic there and what was going on. And was that a safe comment? I don't fully understand it. I do read this story, and I have a lot of sympathy for Abraham in the sense of how he's engaging in this account, but. But Hagar is homeless and has to be in fear. Abraham and Sarah's plan totally fell apart. They don't have a child. And if we stopped at verse 6, we end with the mess that we all can tend to create in our own lives when we trust our plan instead of God's plan. But thankfully, for Abraham and Sarah and for our lives, even when we make a mess by pursuing our own plans instead of God's plans, we know God can intervene and God can restore. And that's where the rest of this chapter comes in. And we're going to read through verses 7 through 16 and think about how God intervenes in this situation. Verse 7 says that the angel of the Lord found her by the spring of water and in the wilderness. And just a pause for a second. Often the angel of the Lord, many, and I tend to lean this direction when it refers to the angel of the Lord. A few places in the Old Testament. I'm one of many that believe that could actually be a pre-New Testament picture of Christ. Christ being present in this moment. Not just an angel, but the angel of the Lord. Doesn't change the story either way. It's either an angel, could be Christ present. But it says, the angel of the Lord found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, and the spring on her way to Shur. And he said, Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going? Now, again, just like in the previous first six verses, there's a lot of parallel to Genesis 3. That question here, the where have you come from and where are you going, is a penetrating question. It's like, Cain, where's your brother? This is the type of question. We've seen it before in Genesis, that there's a question that's really getting to the heart of the issue of what's happening. Her response, Hagar's response, she says, I am fleeing from my mistress, Sarai. And the angel of the Lord said to her, return to your mistress and submit to her. And the angel of the Lord also said to her, I will surely multiply your offspring so that they cannot be numbered for multitude. If you get in the New Testament, there's a lot of parallel here between Philemon and Paul's instructions to a runaway slave that says, go home. But what happens, and we struggle with this idea because culturally, this idea of a servant running away from their master, we often struggle with this, but when we really look at what's happening here and look at what happens in the New Testament in Philemon, it's getting to the heart of these issues that totally transforms the relationships and undoes the institutions that we would struggle with embracing and should struggle with embracing, because it changes the relationship. When Hagar returns because and submits to Sarah, it's restoring a relationship, and it's allowing God to fulfill his promise not only for Hagar, but also for Abraham and Sarah. Again, verse 10 says, "An angel of the Lord said to her, 'I will surely multiply your offspring so that they cannot be numbered for multitude.' And the angel of the Lord said to her, 'Behold, you are pregnant and shall bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has listened to your affliction. He shall be a wild donkey of a man, his hand against everyone and everyone's hand against him, and he shall dwell over against all of his kinsmen.'" Now, how many of you, when you were waiting for a child, would want the promise in that description of the child you're about to have? Basically, you're going to have a son. That's a promise. He's going to be in conflict his entire life. We're not going to unpack all that, but it definitely. But verse 13 says, "So she called the name of the Lord who spoke to her, 'You are the God of seeing.' For she said, 'Truly, here, I have seen him who looks after me.' And therefore the well was called Beer Lahai Roi. It lies between Kadesh and Bered. And Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram called the name of his son, whom Hagar bore, Ishmael. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore Ishmael to Abram." So this is 11 years now from the initial promise. You know, there's a lot here, but I want to focus on, for a second, Hagar's experience. Because what we see in the first six verses, Sarah is not really painted in real positive light. And what we see in these verses is God really showing his intervention and his care, specifically for Hagar, but really restores the whole situation. But Hagar is actually lifted up in a positive light in how she then trusts, not only hears God's promise, but trusts God's promise. And what we see in this is that Hagar experiences God as a God who hears. And the name Ishmael means God hears. "You shall call his name Ishmael because the Lord has listened to your affliction." You know, this relates so well to any of us when we go through hard times. Because most of the time when we go through really dark valleys, when we go through challenges, how often do we said it, or we heard someone else say, "Does God care? Does God even see what I'm going through? Is God even listening to my prayer?" What we see in this account and each of these names that we're going to look at in these verses is Hagar is experiencing a God who does care, is concerned for her affliction, and is intervening to restore the situation. And we see that first in the very name of Ishmael. Ishmael, meaning God hears, because God is not only providing this promise of a child to Hagar, but even in the name is reminding Hagar that the Lord has listened to her and understands and knows her affliction, the pain that she's in. We see Hagar experiences God as a God of seeing, El Roi. Verse 13 says, "So she called the name of the Lord who spoke to her, 'You are a God of seeing.' And she said, 'Truly here I have seen him who looks after me.'" And then you have in verse 14 the naming of the well. "Therefore the well was called Beer Lahai Roi," which literally means "the well of the living one who sees me." You know, maybe like Hagar, you're here today and you're walking through a valley or challenge, and you're struggling with, and it might be a mess that you made. It may be just something that, just a life circumstance and something that had nothing to do with your choices, and yet it's pain and a heartache that you're going through. Whatever you're going through, if you're in that place where you're saying, "God, do you see me? Do you see what I'm going through? Are you hearing my prayers? Are you even concerned?" What we see in these verses is God intervenes for Hagar. And she has such an incredible encounter with him that she sees not only does God intervene, but she knows that this God is the one who saw her affliction. She heard her prayers. And she memorializes this place and this well as being the well of the living one who sees me. Hagar trusts God and his plan. And this gets back again. Sarah struggled not only trusting the promise, but she trusted God's character. Hagar has just made declarations of God's character, that he does see, that he does hear, that he is concerned. Sarah believed God was preventing her from having children instead of believing God's promise, but Hagar trusted God, the God who sees, the God who hears, the God who is looking after her, and so she trusts God and his character, and then she trusts his plan. God intervenes, rescues Hagar, restores the situation, and we know in the next chapter, God then reaffirms the promise of the child to Abraham. And yet Abraham, again, we see Hagar lifted up as a positive, is affirming. She's trusting God's character. She's trusting his plan, and so she returns. She returns and submits herself to Sarah. She bears a child, and this messy situation is probably still a little messy, and yet God is working, clearly working in this situation. But when we keep reading, and next week we'll be continuing in Genesis, we know that Abraham, even though Abraham would know that God had to have done something, he would have heard the stories from Hagar, the explanation of the name, Ishmael, and reminded of the fact that the promise that God gave to Abraham is now not only going to be fulfilled through this promised child who is yet to come, but even also partially fulfilled through this promise to Hagar, that through Hagar and through Ishmael, there would also be a great nation and a great people. And yet Abraham, even though he sees God intervene in this situation and undo the mess that he and Sarah made, in the next chapter, I want to pull out one verse. After God reaffirms the call to not only that he's going to give Abraham and Sarah a child, but very specifically through Sarah provided child, Abraham's response in Genesis 17:18, Abraham says to God, "Oh, that Ishmael might live before you." Now, what's happening there? Even though Abraham knows that Sarah and Abraham's plan didn't really work, and God is standing there again giving him the reminder of Sarah, a year from now, is going to have a child. Even as he's hearing the repeat of this promise and a very specific promise that Sarah is going to have this child, Abraham reckons back to, in his mind, to this other plan. And so, I mean, and think about this. Basically, God is saying to him again, "I have a plan to give you a child through Sarah." But Abraham says, "Look, I can see Ishmael here before me. Just can't Ishmael be the one who will walk before you?" He's basically telling God, "Can't you just fulfill your plan and your promise through Ishmael?" Ishmael represents Abraham and Sarah's plan to fulfill the promise, and yet God has a greater plan and a greater purpose. And yet when I think about what Abraham is doing here, I think, how often are we guilty of this? Even when we see the messes that we make in our lives when we pursue our plan instead of God's plan, how often do we ask God to bless our plans instead of choosing to embrace the plan that God has for us? I mean, do you understand? Abraham at this point would know that Ishmael was not the plan. And yet he's asking and saying, "God, just fulfill your plan, fulfill your promise through Ishmael. May Ishmael live before you." Too often we're in the same place giving God our plan and saying, "Here it is, God, bless it." And we do that on a personal level. We can do that as a church. We can do that in so many ways where we try to figure things out, we have a plan, and we ask God to bless our plan instead of being fully surrendered to say, "God, I want your will and I want your plan in my life." We have to come to that place that we're willing to embrace Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, to trust the Lord with all of our heart, lean not in our own understanding, don't trust our own plans. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will direct our paths. We have to come to that place where we're willing to pursue God's plan and trust his plan. And I want to leave you just with some practical steps in how we do that. If we're going to know God's plan, we need to know his word. Too often I see people struggling trying to know God's will, and they don't spend any time in his word. And we can't know God's plan. We can't know his character. We can't know his plan unless we're in his word, letting God's word speak to us. We need to keep a record of God's faithfulness. If you don't journal, at least keep a list. When God answers a prayer, remember it. Because when you see God answering prayer, it just reaffirms the fact that he is faithful and we can trust him. We need to learn to listen. Listen to God specifically through his word. Listen to his spirit speak to us. Listen to godly counsel around us. And connected with that, we also need to be aware of our own tendencies. Again, I have someone I love dearly that I have seen that pattern in their life of that struggle of they'll come to me sometimes and they'll ask me and say, what do you think God would want me to do in this situation? And I give counsel and others give counsel, and then that person does what they wanted to do to begin with. And I have been able to step back and realize that's a pattern. They had what they wanted, and so they were trying to ask for God. That's what they wanted, and so they were trying to get God's endorsement on that. And then when it all fell apart, that person then struggled blaming God when it wasn't God's plan to begin with. If that person who I know and love would not only be listening for God, but be listening to the counsel of others, but also looking at their own life and see the patterns and see the tendencies that they have. We all have different tendencies like that. We have to be aware of what's going on in our life and the places that we trip up. Because when we become more aware of how we trip up and then focus our eyes on God, who's, as much as we're unfaithful, we look at God and we see his faithfulness, we know he is going to come through for us. But we have to be in his word. We have to be listening to God's word and his voice in our life and the voice of godly counsel. Be aware of our tendencies and remember and celebrate God's faithfulness. God desires for each of us to embrace his plan and his purpose for our lives. But we have to be willing to let go of our plan to be able to embrace him. Will you pray with me? Dear Heavenly Father, I just thank you again for your word. And Lord, I thank you that even though Abraham is listed as a person who demonstrates faith, Lord, I thank you that we see his humanness. We see the flaws. We see the struggle. And Lord, I just pray that each one of us, as we examine our own lives and as we look in our lives, Lord, that we would be willing to, Lord, just to trust you in your plans and not try to figure things out on our own. Lord, help us to grow in our faith. Help us to see all the times that you have demonstrated your faithfulness so that we can grow in our trusting your character and trusting your promises toward us. And Lord, help us to be willing to step out of our own comfort zones and to that place where we're willing to trust you no matter what it is that you're calling us to. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.